I'm Robin Crane, and this is the Growing Your Financial Business the Woman's Way podcast. Listen, I was a financial advisor for over a decade, and I got so sick of the old archaic strategies that your grandpa used to get clients. What the industry teaches today is still so outdated and just doesn't work anymore. So I had to find a better way for myself, and then I got obsessed with sharing these how-tos with other women like me. The stuff I teach doesn't require giving up your life, your sanity, or your family time. I want women like you to have it easier than I had it, so you can thrive in the industry. I've now helped thousands of women grow their financial businesses to multiple six figures, some even seven figures per year. So on this podcast, you're going to get an inside look at how they did it so you can do it too. Let's dive into the show.
I am very excited to bring on Denise DePaula. We call her the $6 million femme because in a very short time frame, it was actually 7 months that she was able to sell her company for $6 million because of a video that we made at a femme event that was 1 minute and 16 seconds long. So in this episode, you're going to hear how she did that. Actually, her revenue was $2 million a year when she came to me and got up to $3 million before she sold the company in less than 7 months. So pretty incredible. You'll hear about how she's such a giver, really some of the traits that you need to be successful and so much more. So I can't wait for you to jump into this episode. Enjoy it. You're going to love it. Welcome, welcome. This is our special Femme series, and I'm super excited to bring a really good and old friend. I mean, it's not that old, and she's definitely not old, but we got to know each other back in 2015. I know exactly when it was. And this is Denise DePaula. She came to my very first Position Yourself for Profits event, and we call her the $6 million femme. And she's in my book, I think in the intro or the first chapter. And what's so amazing about Denise is that, and you'll hear more about how she did this, but we were able at our first event to make a 1 minute and 16 second video. And yes, I remember the exact time. That's how I am with numbers. 1 minute and 16. I'm like Rain Man when it comes to numbers, but 1 minute, 16 second video that actually attracted someone to buy her business for $6 million within 7 months of us starting to work together. So that's like my big claim to fame for like the biggest, you know, let's say acquisition that we had. And that's Denise. So Denise now is free of that business and living the life, living the dream in Florida. So welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
It's super fun. Like the last time we connected was probably like a year ago. Every once in a while I text you and I'm like, what's going on now? But I remember, you know, back 2015, we were talking about this right before we started recording. I was doing some like random LinkedIn messaging strategy, which I do a lot now and I teach a lot now. But back then I was just kind of getting my feet wet. And that got you to my first one day PYFP, Position Yourself for Profits event. And, you know, then we started working together. But what did you remember from that? Like you got some random LinkedIn message. Do you remember what happened or how that got you there?
It's weird because like it popped up and it was like, are you this, that, the other? Like, do any of these things resonate with you? And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of me. And then I did
an infomercial and you responded. Awesome.
Yeah,
do you feel bloating at 2 o'clock in the afternoon? No.
Yeah. I just clicked through to see what it was. And it was actually in New Jersey and I was in Long Island. It was a bit of a hike. But then I looked at the price and it wasn't crazy money. And I'm like, you know what? Something just told me. Just go. What's the worst that can happen? It's $100. It's a couple hours out of your day. You know, I mean, who knew that it would change my life forever, right? And it was like divine intervention because when we talked about it, you're like, how did you get that? Like, that wasn't supposed to go to you. And
right, because you weren't a financial advisor. And I don't actually think at the time, because that was the very beginning, I wasn't specifically targeting like financial advisors, but still it sounds like it was like not super intentional. It just seeped through somehow in the marketing. Right. And then, you know, I know we've talked about this before, but what I used to do, and this is a strategy that if you guys ever do events, you can totally do, but I wanted to indoctrinate the people who were coming. It was a very small event. I believe we had 8 women there and 3 of them were clients. So it was like, there were 5 potential clients there. I think 2 or 3 were maybe clients. That was the first time Ashley, who's now my COO, came to an event. Like we just hired her as an assistant. And before the event, we got on a phone call that was supposed to be 15 minutes. And do you remember that call?
I do. Yes.
And I remember you saying to me, you're like, be, you know, after you eventually decided to work with me, you were like, I had no idea what you were selling. All I knew is I was going to this event and I was buying whatever you were going to offer, because with that conversation that turned into 45 minutes was so valuable. Do you remember that? Like,
yes.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't make it up. And what's crazy is, like, we oftentimes, I talk a lot about stretching outside your comfort zone and how important it is. Well, that was one of these conversations. Back then we weren't on video. It was just, you know, a call. And I asked her, you know, questions to understand her business and how much you're making a year, you know, what's your revenue? And she's like $2 million a year. And I'm like in my seat going like, holy crap, you know, like not saying anything, but just like freaking out because I wasn't anywhere near that. I was in the $100,000-ish or $200,000 range going like, how am I supposed to help this person when she's so much further along? So I had my insecurities, but at the same time, I knew how to ask good questions. I knew how to understand, you know, like to get a clearer picture. And this is, I think, a really good one for the audience is like, you might find people are wealthier than you, they have more money than you, whatever, but you know things that they don't if it's in your area of expertise. And they're, what I was good at with you, Denise, I think was asking the right questions to get you clear and understand where the challenges were and what you want. And I'm like, okay, I can help you with that. And then you came to the event.
And the one thing I'll tell you that my financial advisor told me early on when I started to make money, he said, you may make money this year, but don't think you're always going to make that kind of money. So even though, like, to you, me saying I've made $2 million last year or whatever it was, may have seemed like a lot. I know from experience and from what my advisor had told me, that's not always sustainable. You may have a bad year. And you know, for sure I did over the year. So it wasn't like I was making $2 million every year and I had, you know, all this crazy wealth. So I knew enough, you know, that I needed to step up my game and do things to continue to make money if I wanted
yeah,
to.
Yeah. And some of the things that, like, what I realized, again, it's kind of like, again, using this as an analogy for financial advisors. Some people say, oh, well, if you work with someone, like one of my Edward Jones clients used to work with someone who had $100,000 and managed her, you know, manage their accounts. And then people kept saying to her, well, why don't you manage, you know, people with $1 million? And she's like, I don't know how to do that. And they're like, it's just an extra zero. And she didn't feel like that was true because it felt so scary because you say 100,000, oh, I can do that because I feel like I'm there, I'm good enough. And most of it's mindset. But then you say $1 million. And if you've never had $1 million, maybe managed $1 million, it's hard to just think, oh yeah, it's an extra zero. But for sure, it's like, it's a similar thing. It's like you were making $2 million a year. And what I realized that kind of knocked me out of my seat was that you still had the same problems that everyone had that I was talking to if they were making $200,000 or $500,000 or $100,000. It's like you still were undercharging. You were very, you're still very, very generous. We'll talk about that as well, but very generous. So you were giving so much time away. You weren't really clear on who your ideal client was. You were working with some people. She's an accountant. She was an accountant for hedge fund managers. So, like, sometimes you'd have these hedge fund managers with billions of dollars in management. And sometimes you'd have some that were super tiny and you'd still take them on. And so you weren't very selective. So, like, all the same, that's how I knew I could help you, even though I wasn't making the same kind of money you were at the time. Cause I was like, oh, these are problems I solve, same problems. It's just an extra zero. You know, so that was kind of interesting to me. So what do you remember kind of from joining FEM? Like what concerns did you have or what were your thoughts during that time? And maybe what kind of made you decide like, yeah, this is where I want to be, the community I want to be in and to help that you believed you could help, it would help you grow your business.
Yeah. So I would say a couple of things. I was always a firm believer of you are who, or you become who you surround yourself with, right? So for sure, I wanted to be surrounded by like-minded individuals, whether it was women or men, it doesn't matter. But these were all women who were trying to improve their businesses, learn from one another, and that sort of thing. So that was interesting. And I don't usually get along well with women because they're not as...
but that's okay. As open or like, cause I think that's very common.
They're just not, I was in a man's world, right? So hedge fund managers are typically men. You kind of have to have a thick skin to deal with them. And so, you know, women don't always understand what I do. So I didn't never really hung around women before this mm-hmm. event. And now I have like lifelong friends as a result of it that I still keep in touch with. So that That's was awesome. Kind of cool. And then the other thing was, and I never believed this until recently when we got together, was that if you look at anyone who is a professional at what they do, whether it's an athlete or a singer, they all have two things in common for the most part. They believe in God and they have a coach, right? And so I'm like, I need a coach. Like, you know, I'm good at what I do, but it's so limited. Like I'm an accountant, like I can count, but like, I don't know how to sell. I didn't consider myself a salesperson, but really I was selling the business. Like I was selling me for people to allow me to do their books and records for them. Right. So you taught me how to do that.
That's awesome. Yeah. And actually, you know, you were in the very first Femme and Faith and Hope were in that. If you remember Faith and Hope, I'm sure you do, they're obviously twins. And they're still in Femme today, by the way. And they're architects and everyone else mostly is like financial advisors, and they're still getting so much out of it because of that community, because of that space where you can share. And I do think it's the highest level, you know, like the cream of the crop. Like, first of all, to find business owners, period, let alone women, let alone successful women, let alone women who are successful and willing to share and being open and share the secrets and all the things to help other women. Cause I don't know why it is, but it just so happens that there are a lot of women when they kind of in the man's world, they get to a point where with the, you know, suit and not necessarily a tie, but like playing that role where you got to be harsh, you got to be strict, and you kind of are like a little bit of scarcity around that too, that like you don't want to share all your secrets because you kind of have to be in this defensive world. And I think what's great about Femme and the community is that there was always this, you know, the sharing and this abundance of whether it's information, whether it's of support, whether it's of, you know, just wanting everybody to succeed and knowing that actually we're better together, you know, better together. Right. And you reminded me of something. Like I recently listened to a podcast, Alex Hormozi actually, and he was talking about like there are three things that that successful people have in common. You said they believe in God, they have a coach, but it was very different. But I think that's also valuable, obviously. But is that he said, number one, they have somewhat of a superiority complex. He's like, they think they're better than everybody else. Like, I'm going to, you know, be on this huge stage. Like, I have these visions of me, like meeting Tony Robbins and speaking to tens of thousands of people and like having millions of followers, whatever. Okay, that's like me thinking I can make it where most people in the world may not. And he said, but the second thing is like the opposite. It's like an inferiority complex. Like, we're like, I'm not good enough. Like, we have this feeling of, but I'm not good enough. And I don't know if I can actually make it. I think I should make it, of course. But like, then we maybe feel small or less than. And the third thing that he said was that I can't remember exactly how he said it, but essentially there's a commitment to a result without needing to see the progress or get the result right away. So it's almost like this patience. He didn't say patience, but around getting this result. Like, we're just like, you know, on this path. And I say we, cause I want to put myself in this category, the most successful people on the planet. Maybe I'm not, but the thing I realize is like, I do kind of have this superiority complex. I definitely have an inferiority complex, like, especially when I'm around super successful people, even talking to you that first time, I'm like, am I really good enough to help this woman? You know, and I could play the part cause I know the system. I know it has asked questions, but I got off that call sweating, going like, holy crap, thank God she didn't know. Like, I'm just an imposter, you know, but also enough to know, like, but I do believe I can really help her. So I'm not screwing her by asking her for money. You know, like, I know I'm going to help her make more money than she's going to pay. But the last thing is something I'm totally working on is like, okay, being committed to the end result and not always like getting, you know, those wins every second, like all the time on the way. And it's just that like patience of it's going to happen. Cause I'm typically like, oh, urgency, urgency. Everything has to happen yesterday, taking way too much on my plate because I'm, you know, because I think I have to do everything now. And if it's not happening now, then I must like need to change my approach, you know? So that's the thing I'm working on. Have you noticed that? Because I mean, this is just his opinion, but have you noticed that, you know, you have those traits because you've obviously had a lot of success?
I don't think I do. So I'm going to tell you.
You're not really successful then. No, just kidding.
I might not be. No, what I noticed for me, like, So when I got out of school and I became an accountant, right, my very first hedge fund client was a year younger than me, and he was making millions of dollars a year. And I'm like, what makes him any better than me? Like, why can't I make millions of dollars a year? So in my head, so I'm in my 20s, right, at this point. I'm like, by the time I'm 30, I want to be making $100,000 a year. And by the time I'm 40, I want to make a million. So this is what I had. I'm like, because if he can do it, I can do it. Like, you know, I'm dealing with wealthy people. So again, I think it goes to who you surround yourself by. And then, so I missed the $100,000 mark by, like, I was already 30. It was in my 30th year, but like I was already 30 and I didn't quite make it. But I made my first million before I was 40. So I made up for it, right, on the other end.
Yeah.
But no, I don't feel I have a superior complex or an inferior one. I just do me.
Yeah. And I do think, so that's really interesting. And I do, damn it, I just admitted, I think I'm better than people and worse than people at the same time. But strike that from the record, please. No, just kidding. But that's, yeah. And maybe that's more of my desire to be, you know, on stage and like the, you know, this whatever big mission and whatever that I'm driven for, I don't know. But what I know about you and what like always struck me as like the reason that you were really successful is that honestly, you were in the right industry, one, and you also expected to be successful. Like, I think you just expected you'd be successful. Like you said it here too. Like, you're like, oh, I can't, if he can do it, I can do it. There's some superiority there. Like, if this idiot can do it, I can do it. I'm just kidding. But, you know, maybe it's there. You never struck me as having the inferiority thing. Yeah. Like, you're just like kind of confident, like you can get there, but you were just willing to work hard and like with the very much no bullshit, like, you don't make excuses. We never, like when I was coaching you one-on-one, it was never like, you know, you tell me what was going on in your life and it was not easy. And there are a lot of things that were going on that were not easy that a lot of people, other people would complain about and blame and use as an excuse for not having the success or not being able to do the work. And you were never like that. And I do find that there's, when I talk to people who I'm like, I don't know if I could help them, it's because of their patterns that they're running of like, you know, the storytelling, the excuses, the blaming others, just not taking responsibility. And I'm like, man, I can give them all the keys to the kingdom and they're going to wear the key around their neck and never open the freaking gate. You know, it's like, because there's always a reason why they can't do it. And I think you're just very much the opposite. Like, you're always finding a reason why you can, you know, with all the challenges you've had in your life and your family and all the things, it's like, no, you can find a way and you will find a way. And there ain't nobody going to tell me I'm not going to be able to do it. Like, I definitely think you got that attitude that you're like, move over, dude. If you can do it, I can do it. Like, I don't need you telling me I can't, and I'll prove you wrong.
And the other thing is, like, because I have a daughter now who's going to school. She's in grad school to become a CPA, wants to kind of follow in my footsteps. Although I don't know if she will ultimately, because I really feel like to be successful, you need to do what you love and the money will follow. Like, if you don't love what you're doing, it's going to show through. Like, I don't think I ever worked a day in my life. Like, I just love what I do. And even though I don't have to work anymore, I'm still doing it. Right?
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. That is very true, which I think is really typical for women who are in the financial industry. They got into it because they love it and they want to do it. But then all this other shit comes with it that you're like, wait, I didn't sign up for this. Like sales, like you said, you weren't really good at sales. It's like, I think sales is just transformation, but I didn't always, when I first started as a financial advisor, I thought it was manipulative and greedy. And like, I didn't want to push people. And that's what sales felt like. Like, I was trying to push people into doing something they didn't want to do. You learn the right skills in sales and just, you realize you're just figuring out what do they want, what's holding them back, and is this the right fit to like pave the path for them to move forward? I love sales now because I'm like, this is the only way I can transform their life. Like, if they don't put money down and work with me, or, you know, back when I was a financial advisor, like say yes, sign the paperwork and do the financial plan, then how's their life going to change? They're just going to make the same excuses as they did before, you know? So, yeah. So that's interesting. So you don't think your daughter loves it? It's, or you don't think she will love it?
We have different personalities. Like I said, like for the particular industry that I was in, you know, dealing with a lot of men and men with very strong personalities, like you have to have a thick skin. Like she's not as emotionally strong to deal with that. So I don't know that that's the avenue she will end up going. And she's way smarter than me, like when it comes to book smarts and things like that. But the ambition, the motivation, the drive, like she's just not there. Mm-hmm. She's not mature enough yet. Like we don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah. So let's talk about that for a second, because I do think, so that's real. Like what you're saying, because you don't have an inferiority complex, like the thick people would think I have a thick skin, I would imagine, because I come off as very confident. I am very confident in many ways, but I also, like, I'm very sensitive. And as my husband says, if it's, he goes, just because it's not a compliment does not mean it's criticism. Meaning, like, anything he says, it's not just like, it's a matter of fact, you are messy. Like, that's a fact. Like, I am not a, you know, I'm a messy person. I'm not an organized person. And I'm like, what does that just mean? I'm not going to be able to succeed in business. You know, it's like, no, it just means you're not organized. Like, it means you're not organized, exactly what I said. And I think it's this total put down or criticism, because I'm like, oh, that must mean something else. And so I have the tendency to be sensitive about things. I'm like, I'm working on it, because I know that's not helping me. But I don't think I wouldn't say anyone's born with a thick skin, but I don't think, like, I, through my upbringing, everything, like, I have a thick skin. I think I just choose transformation over being comfortable. I have a drive, like you said, the drive. I have the drive. I have the drive to help people. I have the drive to succeed. I have the drive to, like, be something bigger than I am, that, like, I, almost it seems impossible. But that stuff, I don't think I have a thick skin. Like, did that come from something, where did you, like, have to get through something challenging, or did you think you were always just kind of like that as a 2-year-old? Like,
I feel like if I look deep enough into it, it probably has to do with my childhood and just having to be more mature than my counterparts and deal with just things growing up. So I don't know. It probably has to do with that. It's an upbringing thing.
It was.
It's an upbringing. Like, I grew up with nothing, right? I came from nothing. You know, my mom was an alcoholic, and I had all these challenges to deal with. Like, where my daughter grew up with me, she grew up with money. I'm not an alcoholic. It was, you know, pretty stable. She had everything handed to her. She never had to work for anything. So I kind of messed up in that aspect. Like, I'm a great accountant, not so good a mother, right?
Oh, I don't think that's true, but I do think it's hard, because it's like, I have the same thing. It's like, where do we draw the line? Like, we want to give our kids opportunity, but it's, we don't want them to be entitled. You know, my daughter now is 16 and she's looking for a car, and she's my stepdaughter. So we're talking to her mom, and basically I left her mom a message. We're getting along really well, which is amazing. And, you know, we gave Phoenix some money to get a car, and her mom's like, well, I don't, you know, we gave her $5,000 because I want her to work for it, not just like to go buy the nicest, go get a Tesla and not have to work for anything and get the nicest car. Like, I want her to have to work for it. And her mom's like, well, I can contribute because I don't know if that's going to be enough for, you know, a safe car and stuff. And I'm like, that's fine. But here's my take. Like, I want her to have to work to at least pay for half of insurance, to at least pay for gas, to contribute to the car, you know, so it's not just like everything is handed to her. Is she's a really, really good kid. And she's also, of course, she's spoiled. She kind of just gets what she wants. So I know, I think it's really a fine line of like, well, how do we create the best, like, being a mom is freaking harder than running a business. Like, how do you give them all the opportunity in the world without creating entitled children and having them have a good work ethic and all those things? And some of that, I think, is kind of inherent in our personality. And I think a lot of it is just how we bring them up. But going back to, I just want to comment on what you said. Like, I have another woman who will be on the podcast as well, Suzanne Powell, and she was also super, super successful. And she grew up in a trailer park and had no money. And, you know, when she was asked her mom when she's going to get a car and how she's going to pay for it, her mom was, I think, a waitress. You know, she's like, you're going to work. Like, you got to get a job. How am I going to pay for college? Like, do we have money set aside? She's like, what do you mean set aside? No, like, I got money for the bills, and like, I don't even have enough for that. You're going to have to figure it out, you know? So she had so many challenges growing up financially that she, like, I think she read, what's the book? Rich Dad, Poor Dad at 16 years old, and was like, mom, what's passive income? And she's like, I don't know. And she's like, but I just read about it, you know? So she had to figure it out. And when I talk about her, I often talk about, you know, stretching outside your comfort zone, like the harder it is, the more we stretch and the more we grow. And if you had a lot of challenges growing up, you probably have a much thicker skin because you've stretched this comfort zone. Like the things that scare you or the things that are hard for you, well, if you can live that, if you can like get through that, like it's going to be, life is going to be easier. So we would never want to switch places. If you told us all the details of growing up with an alcoholic and no money and all the challenges, we would never say, oh, I wish I could trade places with you. But then here where you are right now, you made $6 million, you know, after 7 months of, you know, doing a 1 minute and 16 second video. Like we all want that. But not with right. the pain. We just want all the results, right?
Right.
But so that shapes you, yeah.
What you just said, like, so yes, I have a thick skin today, but like, you don't like criticism. I don't like being told no. And I think that was part of my biggest problem with sales is like, if someone tells me no, like, I'm like, ee! So, but that's also the reason why I'm successful, right? Or that I was always driven to make money because I asked my mom for something. I was 6 years old. I was in a store. I wanted this thing. She told me no. And I was like, okay, that's the last time anyone's telling me no because I want that thing, right? Mm-hmm. So I went out, I was shoveling snow. I was raking leaves because what can I do at 6 years old? Like, you know, that's it. Like I'm going door to door and I'm going to, you know, do this. And then like, I remember selling Avon at like 11 years old, door to door, selling makeup. Then my older friends had a paper route. I wasn't old enough to deliver papers, but what they did was they subbed it out to me. Like I would deliver their papers.
Some contract.
They would like give me a cut, you know? So,
oh my God.
And then I forged my working papers when I was 13 so I could work at McDonald's. And I told them I was 16. I didn't know they were going to ask me for proof, right?
That is so awesome. I love that.
But I've always, like, I'm just like, you know what? I'll do it myself. Like, cause I don't want to be told no. So that's like another probably personality thing that.
Yeah. That's a great distinction. Well, I want to touch upon just the give back and, you know, you mentioned, obviously you have a connection with God and I know you're connected with the church and tell them the story after you sold your business for $6 million and tell us the story about going to the church and all that. Cause it's, I put it in my book cause I'm like, man, this is just so evident of why it's so important. My book, Make More Money, Help More People. Like you just demonstrated it after you made a bunch of money. So tell them the story about that.
Right. So a couple of things, I will tell you that story, but I feel like it's always important to one, treat people the way you want to be treated, be generous, even when you don't have it. Like my employees' nickname for me was White Oprah. They were like, you got a car. Cause I would always be walking into the office like with gifts for them, like that they were not expecting. Like when iPads came out, everybody got an iPad. You know, everybody got after they were with me for 10 years, got a family vacation wherever they wanted to go.
Wow, that is generous.
So, but I don't know. I love making people happy. So now fast forward, I walk into this church. It's a new church to me. I've only been there a short period of time, maybe 3 weeks. It's coming up on the holiday season. And the pastor gets up and he says, you know, we're coming up on year end. This is like the time of giving where everybody's super generous. And by the way, our budget is short this year and by 6%. And so if you want to give extra, you know, I'll be happy to buy you a coffee as a joke because the coffee was free in the lobby when you came to church, right? So now I'm sitting there going, well, what's 6%? I don't know their budget. I don't know if it's $50, if it's $1 million. Like, I don't know what that means. So I don't say anything. I don't know anybody there. And then the following week I go back and somebody must have asked him the question. So he says, you know, I was asked the question, what's 6%? Well, it's $60,000 is what we're short. So if anyone wants to write a check for $60,000, meet me in the lobby after the service, right? So now I'm sitting there in my chair and I'm like, I hear God like distinctly telling me you have to go do this because you've been blessed this year. You were able to sell your business and make all of this money and you know, you need to do this. So I get up, I go to one of the ushers and I said, can you introduce me to the pastor after the service? I want to help with, you know, the budget. So he's like, yeah, sure. Takes me out there, introduces me to the pastor who is, by the way, rude. Okay. And he's like, don't I know you? And I said, no, you don't know me. And I said, well, my niece goes here. Maybe, you know, the last name or something, like, I'm not sure. And he's like, yeah. Well, the need is $60,000. And he goes, so whatever you can do of that will be great. And I said, okay, you know, are you going to be here tomorrow? because I had adopted children for Christmas that I had bought presents for that I needed to drop off before I went to the Cayman Islands for business, right? And as I was leaving, and there was a deadline. So he's like, yeah, I'll be here. So I show up the next day in my Chevy Tahoe, loaded to the gills with presents for these kids that I had like adopted, you know, not really right. adopted, but, and I walk into the church and I see the pastor and I said, hey, do you remember me? You know, do you think you can help me bring in some gifts? And then I'd like to talk to you. And he said, yeah, sure. So he comes out, he's like, we just do it. I go, well, it's going to be a bunch of trips. So like 3-4 trips back and forth. And there's still a bike in the car. And he says, well, who's the bike for? I said, well, it's not for me. Like, get it out. So, you know, we bring it in. He's like, oh my God, you know, this kid's going to be so happy, whatever. So we bring it all in. And he's like, oh, so now he knows I'm serious. Right. So then he walks me into his office and I said, I understand the need is $60,000. I said, but I can write you a check for $50,000 today. And if between now and the end of the year, you don't get the other $10,000, I'll write you a check for that. But I just need to get paid again before I can do that. And this guy turned beet red. His jaw was on the floor and he was so embarrassed because I think of the way that he treated me initially. And anyway, so he's like, what can I do for you? So I'm like, pray for my son. What's your son's name? Blah, blah, blah. He's on his knees. He's praying. Now he's parading me all around the church, introducing me to everyone.
Yeah.
But anyway, fast forward a year later, he got up and did a service and spoke about how he treated me initially when I had wanted to help. And he said, it's because most of the time people with money are not generous.
Mm.
They say they will, but they never come through. Or, and it's usually the people that don't have anything that are usually more generous because they're used to not having. So I don't know if it's because I came from nothing, I want people to have, I don't know what the, you know, yeah. the magic formula is, but it was so cool because he was like,
wow.
you know, like the impact that I had, which you don't even realize you have when you're doing things like that, you know, like mm-hmm. I saved my job and I was able to do this and that. And just like hearing those things.
So amazing.
It's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, so cool. And like how nice of you to, I mean, you're not the type of person to hold a grudge or to be like, well, he was a jerk, so I'm not going to give it to another church. Like, you're not thinking about him. It's not about how he even though you're like, you should treat me nicely, but you're thinking about the giving and who's going to benefit. Wasn't it like a ramp or something for handicap? Like, I have in my head, it was something like that, or
it was a bunch of different things that it was for.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But so. Anyway, regardless, like you're like, okay, he asked for 60,000. You're like, oh, I just want to make sure they didn't miss it because it sounded like got cut off. So you're like, I can write you a check for 50,000 now and then 10,000 next time I get paid.
Right.
So you just did it all. You did it all. And like, I mean, that was so cool for me, like so cool for me to feel like, wow, like I can't wait to help more people like Denise who are willing to take action, you know, do the work, be uncomfortable, you know, get incredible results. And then the second they get this huge windfall to be able to give back and do something like amazing. So that was just so awesome because I think there are probably a lot of rich people who aren't generous and there are probably a lot of rich people who are, and you know, who knows, but like, regardless, that's, I think who I attract is that the women in our group, like we want to make more money to help more people. We want to make more money because we, you know, we should get paid more for the value that we provide. Like it would be weird if I didn't get paid very much and helped you make $6 million. And unfortunately I didn't get as much as the church, but, but like, fortunately the church got more than I did. Right. But no, but like, I always want the value to well exceed, you know, the amount that you would ever pay me, that it doesn't really cost you anything. And then to see that ripple effect, be able to see you give to, you know, your church and give to the world. Like, and that was just the beginning. It's not like, oh, and that was the last time she gave. Okay, we're done here. You know, it's like, you're just such a giver and that's so amazing. I want to just touch upon one more thing. And I know you had a couple things you might want to add. My dog might make some noise because she's trying to get out here. But the video that we made, like, just tell them about that, because that was the plan. Was not, let's make a video, put it on your website, let's attract merger and acquisition and sell your company. Like, that was not the plan. And there, you, I think you were this close. No one's looking, very, very close to not even posting it. because right. you didn't think it was perfect. So tell them a little about that experience, and we'll kind of wrap up a few minutes after that.
Right. So one of the things that you made us do as femmes is like get out of our comfort zone and do things that we were uncomfortable with. And I don't like the way I look in pictures. I don't like the way I look in video. I don't like the way I sound. So right away, this was like the worst thing you could have asked me to do, right? And also like do something that's like rehearsed. Like I could sit here and have a conversation with you and I'm very comfortable doing that. But if it's like something I have to remember and speak in a minute, like it was awful. I'm not going to lie. But anyway, we did it. And you were like, I love it. It's perfect. I'm like, I hate it. It's not. And you're like, nope, you're putting it up on your website. I'm like, no, I'm not putting it up on my website. You're like, you're doing it. And so I listen because I'm coachable, right? So I listen, I put it up on my website, you know, cringing the whole time. And then weeks later, I get a call from Australia from this woman who said, my boss wants to speak to you. And I was like, you know, what's this about? And anyway, so it was the largest hedge fund administrator in Australia who saw the video and told his secretary, get me on the phone with this woman. I need to speak to her. And they wanted to acquire my company. And that's, you know, fast forward how we get to my $6 million of fame. And here we are.
Yeah, she's the famous $6 million femme. That's very awesome. Cool. Well, I love it. Anything else you want to add? I know you had a couple things maybe that you wanted to say that I don't want to forget about.
This was not on my list, but I just wanted to tell you like about as far as like there's two things. One, some of the sales skills that you taught us, you know, like how to ask the questions, how to identify whether or not you're dealing with the person who makes the decisions and how to deal with objections and all of those things, right? So I had a call with someone who was trying to sell me in that very same manner. And it was like I could have spoken the words that they were going to ask me. And I was like, you know what? I know you're selling me. And I'm going to buy just because I love that.
So cool. I did.
I bought it. And then
awesome.
The other thing, you know, not just generous with the church. Obviously, I love my church and I do that. But now what I'm doing is, and I didn't even tell you, is I'm helping young entrepreneurs start businesses, whether it's I give them advice, I've given them money to start their businesses,
wow.
I've given them businesses that I've started and didn't want to do anymore. And now, most recently, I'm helping my boyfriend, who's a realtor down here. And we just came up with this crazy idea, right? Because we're on the water. And to me, like when I bought down here, I needed direct access to the Gulf. I didn't want bridges. I wanted to be fishing in 10 minutes. So now we are going to sell homes by boat only, like exclusive luxury waterfront home by boat. I'm going to be the captain.
So awesome.
Taking him around and his clients, and we're going to have the champagne and the charcuterie going.
Wow.
How cool is that?
That is a good idea. I love it. Super niched. Yeah.
Right? Because we were on the boat the other day. He goes, how do I do this every day and still make money? I go, well, we're going to sell homes by the boat.
That's amazing. Ooh, I can't wait to hear more about it. That's so cool. And how amazing that you're helping young entrepreneurs. Very cool. I just want to say one thing about that sales thing. Like, I have so many people who are trying to sell me who don't ask the questions that I know they should be asking. And I'm the opposite. Like, I'm not buying from you when you can't even sell to me, like learn a sales process. I mean, sometimes I do anyway, because like, it's a good result. Like I had someone come on and he's like, this was just like 2 days ago. I actually did buy it, but it was around like tax planning and estate planning and like, asset protection, all the things like that I need to do. But, and not nice of me to say this now publicly, but, hopefully he won't listen to this podcast, but he was super, super nice. But he was just like, hey, so I'm going to just go through the presentation for you. And then just, you know, let me know if you have any questions and we'll just go through really quickly. And I don't mind like learning some things, but like, that's not how you start a sales conversation. It's like, you know, we have a whole system. It's like, hey, what made you curious to invest the time and chat with me? So, you know, context, right? Assuming we're to work together, are you the decision makers or is anyone else that's going to make the decision? And he didn't ask many questions. And again, he had a good thing to offer and it was cool and it was very nice. It was just like, man, it was a little bit painful to go through that process. I'm like, I just want to tell you what like, here's the information I need to make a decision based on what my problems are and if you can solve them. And it's like, make it easy for the buyer. So many people give way too, especially advisors, like give way too much information and they're just pitching and then it doesn't feel like you're heard. So I think that's super huge. And sometimes when I have people try to sell me and they don't do the decision maker question, I always use the excuse. I don't always, but I sometimes use the excuse like, well, I got to talk to my husband about it because they didn't ask me. And so I can get out of it. And so I'm like, oh, let me talk to my husband. And all I'm doing is buying myself time to be like, you know, do I want to do this or not? Because I don't have to make the decision because they didn't ask me the decision maker question. So I use it against them. Like, so yeah, I think that like, I think most women don't think they want to be good at sales. Like they're not sitting there going, I want to be better at sales, but every woman wants to provide more value. Every woman, you know, wants to be, you know, if it's the right fit, they would like to have a higher chance of working with the people that they love to work with. So it's like, they don't want to say, oh, I want to be good at sales. But in the end of the day, you want that end result. It's just like, you feel like you want the opposite of like what you think, like you think, oh, I don't want to be salesy. Exactly. That's why you need a good sales process. So you're not salesy. And most people who I think are thinking sales, they think it's almost going to make them more salesy by understanding how to do a proper sales process, but it's absolutely the opposite. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. And I just feel like sales has a negative connotation. Like you think of sleazy used car salesmen when I hear the word sales, you know? So even when we were thinking of this, like shop for homes by boat or whatever, he wanted to put sell your or something with the word sale in it. I go, no, we're not using sale. It's gotta be something fun like shopping.
Yeah, that's great. That's so great. Well, I can't wait to hear how that goes. Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Denise. It's been amazing to have you and share your wisdom and your personality and just it's super fun for us to catch up. So thank you very much. And those of you, again, who are thinking like, what is this FEM thing? We are doing our last round of FEM. So if you have a successful business, but you want to take it to much higher heights, you don't need to be at the $2 million level, but six-figure level, wanting to double, triple, quadruple, or maybe have a huge win and sell your company for $6 million, then reach out to us. You can just send us an email at support@robincrane.com. Put FEM in the subject line. It's FEMM, as in female empowered moneymakers. And we'll see if it makes sense for us to jump on a call and see if you're a fit, because we're going all the cream of the crop women on this one because it's the last one. So thank you guys all so much. Thanks, Denise.
Good luck with that, Robin. Good to
thank
see
you.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.